This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, June the 28th, 2013. Hello and a very warm welcome to this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, in which we'll be reading extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending June the 28th, 2013. Bill Argles and Christine Aston are our editors for this week. And I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter for today, and our readers are Gerry Tough.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Claire Porter.
Hello.
Now, we'll begin with the What's On section, with a production coming up at the Chesil Theatre, Winchester. It's described as a sizzling comedy about marriage and divorce, set at the close of the First World War. It's written by W. Somerset Maugham. The production opens on Saturday, the 6th of July, and runs to Saturday, the 13th of July. Tickets are priced from £10 and can be booked at www.chesiltheatre.org.uk. That's www.chesiltheatre.org.uk. Or by calling 0844 8700 887. That number again, 0844 8700 887. And, of course, the 2013 Winchester Festival of the Arts begins on Friday the 5th of July, running to Sunday the 14th of July 2013. Full information can be found on www.winchesterfestival.co.uk. That's www.winchesterfestival.co.uk. And tickets can be booked by calling 01962 857 276. That's 01962 857 276. And here are just a few of the attractions on offer. Opening the festival on the 5th are the Philharmonia Orchestra, the Wainfleet Singers, Owen Arwell Hughes, and Andrew Lumsden, with a programme including Berlioz's Te Deum and Saint-Saëns Organ Symphony. Michael Portillo visits on the 6th. His talk is entitled All Stations from Westminster, Politics and Railway Journeys. I understand Mr. Portillo is something of a railway buff, and he combines this with his experience in politics in Westminster. On the 12th of July, Sir Roy Strong and Brian Sewell talk under the title of The Insider and the Outsider. The 13th of July brings James Landale to tell us cautionary tales from Westminster. It would be interesting to see what he and Mr. Portillo have in common. The closing concert on the 14th is provided by the Nash Ensemble, with music by Brahms, Haydn and Schubert's beautiful Trout Quintet. Well, that's just a small sample of what's on offer. Again, full details can be found on www.winchesterfestival.co.uk or by calling 01962 857 276. That number again, 01962 857 276. And not least, the Hat Fair begins in Winchester on Friday the 5th and continues until the 7th of July. It is billed as being bigger, better and bouncier than ever before. Hatters will be all over the city carrying out feats of daring do with their hats outstretched, not to be missed. And we wish them, and all of us, very good weather. An altogether exciting time this for Winchester coming up. And also coming up now are the lighting times for the week ending Friday, June the 28th. When lighting up time began at 4:54 a.m. and ends at 9:25 p.m. And on Wednesday the 3rd of July, the sun will come up at 4:57 a.m. with lights out at 9:23. If you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. And of course, you know that if you want to skip any particular item on this recording, just press the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player to move to another track. The main headlines this week are spectacular stunts signal end of National Cycle Week, hundreds of council jobs to go, River Park will be replaced on its existing site. And Jerry has the first headline story, please.
Spectacular stunts signal the end of National Cycle Week. As King Alfred gazed down, Winchester City Centre witnessed a series of spectacular stunts signalling the end of National Cycle Week. Around 3,500 attended Winchester Cycle Fair, which saw the Broadway transformed into a hive of pedal-based activity, including roller racing, a mountain bike display, and a cycle treasure hunt. It was all part of Cycle Fest, a joint venture between Winchester City Council, British Cycling, Cycle Tours UK, Hampshire County Council, and Winchester BID. The free event was for people of all ages, as long as they liked bikes. Despite the grey skies, the weather more or less held out as stunt displays from Savage Skills enthralled spectators. Residents were also encouraged to visit the recently restored Hockley Viaduct, where British Cycling, VC Venter and Sport Hampshire and the Isle of Wight laid on a host of wheel-based activities. City Councillor Vicky Weston said, "The number of people enjoying the Viaduct and the Cycle Fest was fantastic." The activities included Try a Bike, breathtaking trials and displays, bike bus rides along the NCN23 route across the Viaduct, mountain bike courses, Decorate Your Bike, and vintage bikes dating from 1819. It was a brilliant day, organised by a great team, and we're looking forward to putting it on again and seeing all our residents on August the 11th. On that day, Winchester hosts another family cycle day, which will repeat the activities offered last weekend as part of the building up to the Winchester Criterium Cycle Race later that day. A criterium is a closed-circuit race through the streets of the city centre, where competitors repeat the same course as many times as they can within a set time limit. Spectators are in for a sporting spectacle, as participants will reach speeds of 30 miles per hour, starting and finishing at the Buttercross. And there are two photographs illustrating this article, one of a young man called Ben Savage, of the firm Savage Skills, and another one of a young man called Charlie Lane, who seems to be hanging in the air, upside down, just in front of King Alfred.
Hundreds of council jobs to go. Cuts totally unnecessary, says union. Hundreds more jobs could be axed at Hampshire County Council on top of the 1,400 already shed over the last 2 years. The Conservative-led council, which employs 12,500 people, wants to save up to £80 million by 2015 to cope with reduced government funding. Local authorities are facing 10% cuts in central funding next year. But public sector union, Unison, has attacked the plans and said strikes could not be ruled out. County chiefs are expecting a total loss in central funding of £32.2 million next year, with more in future. Meanwhile, Winchester City Council looks set to lose about £580,000 in funding next year. It has shed about 25 jobs in recent years. County Council leader Roy Perry insisted he could not yet say how many jobs would go, but £10 million had been earmarked in reserves for bigger payouts to staff who take voluntary redundancy. The Cabinet met behind closed doors on Monday. A confidential report was made public by Councillor Perry after a request from the Chronicle heralding a new openness. The report revealed the Council is considering more cuts to senior management and a recruitment freeze, a clampdown on expensive agency staff, renegotiating contracts, fewer offices, and more effective partnership with the NHS. Mr. Perry was among 152 council leaders to sign an open letter to Chancellor George Osborne earlier this month, warning of a serious impact on local services if cuts continue. But Hampshire has come under fire from unions and opposition councillors for hoarding more than £300 million in contingency funds. Most are earmarked for specific purposes, such as schools and settling insurance claims, but millions could be used to head off services and job cuts. Tim Cutter, branch secretary of Unison at the County Council, said, "The council should use its reserves to make up for the loss of government grants. These job cuts are totally unnecessary." But Mr. Perry defended the restructure. He said, "If we do not have further reductions, we could quickly exhaust the reserves and have no means in the long term to reduce our expenditure." The County Council has already slashed £100 million from its budget over the last 2 years. The cuts represented about 16% of its expenditure. Councillor Keith House, leader of the Lib Dem opposition, said, "The job losses were inevitable, given the reduced funding."
River Park will be replaced on its existing site. Winchester Civic Chiefs are pressing ahead with plans to replace River Park Leisure Centre. The Conservative-controlled council has decided against building a new complex at Bar End, preferring to replace the existing centre with a new facility on the same site. Speaking at a cabinet meeting as the Chronicle went to press, council leader Keith Wood said the Bar End option was not financially viable. For the council to take on a debt of £25 to £30 million seems pretty high risk, even when there are suggested levels of outside funding. Provision for elite sports people is important, but our primary aim is to provide facilities to people of all abilities. He added, "The existing site at River Park is our best option to go forward." The news was welcomed by both Labour and Lib Dem group leaders. A progress report will come back to the Cabinet in September, including details of what the new complex will provide. It is understood it will include a 25-metre swimming pool, a new sports hall, and a fitness suite.
Thank you very much, everyone. We're going to read the death notices next, and after that, Claire will follow with Christian comment. The death announcements are Bendall, Howard Charles Bendall, peacefully at home, 22nd of June.
Hall, Ronald, Ron Hall, peacefully on 18th of June, age 92.
Lawless, Lieutenant Commander, SCC, RNR, Joe Lawless, peacefully at home on the 16th of June.
Matthews, Maud Matthews, peacefully on 18th of June.
Simpson, Christopher Philip Chris Simpson, on the 17th of June, aged 65.
Southern, Claire Suzanne Southern, on the 7th of June.
Sutton, Alice Sutton, 19th of June, aged 92.
Watson, Steve Watson, 23rd of June, aged 49.
White, Phyllis May White, peacefully at home, 18th of June, aged 86. And Claire now is going to give us Christian comment, thank you.
Which is entitled, Doing the Right Thing is Rarely Easy, and it's written by Rosemary A. Baker. Doing the Right Thing. Twice yesterday I heard this phrase on the car radio. The first time was as I was listening to a thriller audiobook. The hero, who had been in the US military police, was explaining he had wanted to be a policeman because he wanted to do the right thing and put wrong things right, and was still trying to do this in his own way. The second time was on the programme Open Book, when the author, Neil Gaiman, was describing his new book and the characters in it, who were a reflection of his childhood. Recent soaps like Emmerdale and Coronation Street have also produced ethical dilemmas. It occurred to me that if one considered recent headlines, these would surely be examples of people doing the exact opposite, as they were certainly not doing the right thing. School teachers absconding with pupils, celebrities attacking their wives in public, and GCHQ monitoring the NHS, let alone the places where such dreadful practices took place. People have spoken out, doing the right thing, losing their jobs, and being scapegoated or ignored. Now we have allegations of undercover police trying to get information to blacken victims' names. Last week, the Girl Guides and Scouts were in the news because the guides were leaving God out of their oath, and for the Scouts, it was to be optional. These two organisations have always been regarded as important in teaching children about values and having a good ethical framework. When I qualified as a doctor 39 years ago, I took a modified version of the Hippocratic Oath, which I have always tried to adhere to. But even then, people could opt out of being part of it. There has always been much discussion as to whether it is still relevant, because medical advances have changed daily, practice beyond recognition. Even in my time, this has become a regular occurrence as new drugs and techniques are developed. The General Medical Council and the Royal Colleges struggle to produce frameworks for guidance and good practice, but these bodies are funded by the medical profession and not by government or users of the health service. Where do we learn what is the right thing to do? Mostly, it would seem, from our families and from our experience of growing up. Schools, churches, guides and scouts also have a part to play, as does increasingly television. Sadly, it is also possible for the opposite to happen. Jesus set an example as to what is the right thing to do. He was not popular with the authorities and lawmakers of his day either. Rosemary A. Baker.
And on to letters to the editors. We have 9 letters today, some of which, after Robin's first one, you'll find has a theme of the fracking and the wind turbines. But Robin first with yours. Thank you.
With the title, Patching Up River Park is Not Viable, Liz Kennett writes from Twyford. My 3 children learnt to swim at River Park Leisure Centre. Over the years, we've used many of the other facilities the centre offers. But now, when we travel to Crawley or Guildford, I realise that Winchester people deserve better facilities for the 21st century. Why shouldn't it aspire to be a beacon of sports excellence with a 50-metre pool, to provide not only variable-size swimming facilities, but space for diving, kayaking, synchro and water polo, as well as a great leisure experience? Patching up River Park is not viable long-term. Now is the time to be brave and invest in the well-being of Winchester's citizens and economic well-being of our city. Liz Kennett, Church Lane, Twyford.
And now the first of the letters dealing with energy matters comes from Jane Nicholson. Dangers of fracking well documented. Anyone who supports fracking should read about the dangers to the water supply caused by this method of obtaining oil. They are well documented. There are numerous examples of contamination amounting to poisoning bad enough to kill livestock and affect human health in the USA. In England, there have been earthquakes. In this area, they will be fracking through chalk and sandstone. Chalk is porous. Any chemical forced either up or down is almost certain to get into the water supply. This includes the inflammable gas and oil that these cowboys are after. Chalk is a fragile rock, easily fractured and also dissolved by acidic chemicals. This means that cracks caused by fracking may well alter watercourses, with some rivers and streams disappearing and others popping up in unexpected places. This, I believe, has already happened in some areas where fracking has occurred. Dissolved bedrock will cause subsidence, which could well damage or even destroy our homes. Like all the others on Badger Farm and in most of Winchester, my house is built on chalk with shallow foundations. It is also not built to withstand earthquakes. I fear even a small one could cause substantial structural damage. No amount of oil or short-term jobs is worth our homes and water supplies. Jobs will actually be lost in the tourism and farming sectors if our potable water is destroyed. Jane Nicholson, Maytree Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And another on the same theme from Judith Martin. Readers confused by the possible advantages of fracking and the campaign against wind farms might consider the Bakken Shale fracking site in the United States. This shale area of North Dakota can now be seen from space as the methane is flared off. Is this really what the Keep Hampshire Green campaigners want? Humanity shows little sign of being willing to curb its energy use to protect future generations and the rest of the planet. Energy has to be found somehow. Shale gas and fracking is categorically not the right way. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Douglas Patterson, chairman of Keep Hampshire Green, saying, "We don't need any more turbines." In reply to Martin Heath's recent letter, I would like to make 3 points about wind farms. The UK has met its target for onshore wind capacity 7 years early. We do not need any more wind farms. The target for 2020 is 13 gigawatts of onshore capacity. We currently have 6.3 gigawatts, that is 4,074 turbines in operation, and 6.7 gigawatts, 2,857 turbines approved and under or awaiting construction. That makes 13 gigawatts already. Yet there are a further 5.7 gigawatts, 2,995 turbines in the planning system. Very few, if any, are needed. and certainly not in Hampshire, which has relatively low wind speeds. We can have renewable energy without destroying countryside. Not far from Bullington Cross is one farm with a biogas plant and solar park under construction. When complete, they will supply 60% of the output of EDF's proposed wind farm, and yet they are invisible from 500 yards. Martin Heath says, doing nothing is not an option. I agree. But it does not follow that we must accept the equivalent of defacing a cathedral to give the appearance of doing something. EDF and Martin Heath would like us to think the wind farm site is at Bullington Cross Junction. Anybody who walks the footpaths to the site will find a stretch of stunning countryside from which roads are invisible and which forms the backdrop to classic Hampshire villages. The people will not be bribed into sacrificing this to satisfy an ideological fixation with wind power, allied to a corporation intent on harvesting subsidies. Douglas Paterson, Chairman, Keep Hampshire Green.
And conversely, this letter is entitled Putting the Case for Wind Farms and comes from Josh MacDonald. Jock MacDonald, I'm sorry about that. My friend Keith's story is wrong on almost everything when he writes about the wind farm at Bullington Cross. He is right, though, about the need for renewable energy. No doubt we shall be standing shoulder to shoulder with Douglas Paterson against fracking for gas and oil when that insidious force invades Hampshire. So where is Mr. Story wrong? High points in Hampshire, and I don't mean in national parks, are windy enough. Wind farms on land are far cheaper than wind farms at sea and less intrusive than wind farms on the coast. All new construction for energy, for instance on nuclear power stations, is subsidised. Planning permission for wind farms is given only when they pass the relevant tests for birds, bats and aeroplanes. Food can still be harvested under wind farms. Many people, including lovers of the countryside, find wind farms majestic and beautiful. The wind farms that I have been under do not make much noise, certainly far less than the traffic on the A303. Unfortunately, almost all construction work, not just on wind farms, produces greenhouse gases. The concrete footprint of turbines is too deep in the earth to be visible when wind farms are dismantled in favour of new technologies that are still to be perfected or discovered. We cannot afford the easy romanticism expressed by Mr. Story and Mr. Paterson when it will lead us to the far worse short-termism of ugly, carbon-spewing, countryside-invading fracking. Nor can we afford the mindless and mistaken take on Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations that judges everything by its monetary cost. Jock MacDonald, Stockbridge Road, Winchester.
Needs of children are top priority. This letter comes from Councillor Peter Edgar, who's Executive Member for Education for the Hampshire County Council. Approval of plans for the Westgate School is good news for parents and children in Winchester and the city as a whole. Among the reasons behind the demand for school places is the high quality of our schools, which partly accounts for the change in demography, with more younger families moving into the city. We need more primary places, which is why we are investing some £15 million to expand the Westgate and two other schools, and we are working towards expanding a further three in the city. Our plans are about providing quality education locally, i.e. near to where children live and where parents want them to go to school. secondary schools will not need to expand. All three already take out of catchment children. As the numbers come through from the primaries, these places will reduce, reverting back to local schools. I am aware some residents have raised concerns about the impact of traffic, but since the Westgate School is sited where there are good routes from a number of directions, many children will be able to walk to school. Our plans include improvements on some roads and more parking spaces on Chilbolton Avenue and Cheriton Road, and staggered start and end times for the schools on the site. No solution can address every concern, but I hope readers can understand and agree that is the needs of our children that must be our top priority. Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, HCC.
And Rupert Pitt of Week says, we must invest in public transport. Keith Taylor recently urged that to reduce nitrogen, NO2, in Winchester, which is 25% above permitted levels, we reduce the number of car parks. But businesses state, if you cut car parks too much, there will be no shoppers left, as they cannot park and will go elsewhere. However, car parks can be closed and shoppers will still come if we have an excellent public transport system, as the Dutch have. The reduced car use will mean that some car parks can close. Sadly, the signs are that car is preferred to public transport. Since 1997, the cost of car travel has gone down by 10%. Whilst the price of bus travel has increased by 18% and rail fares by 6%. We have the highest rail fares in Europe, with some commuters paying four times the amount for similar journeys on the continent. A short commute season ticket to London can be £2,000, whereas it would be half that in France. Winchester could follow Southampton, which has a free bus service from the station to the ferry port, encouraging people to leave their car at home. It is interesting that the bus industry employs 123,000 people, making it one of the largest employers in the UK. The government has shown imagination and commitment to public transport with the HS2 rail route from London to Birmingham. However, the £32 billion cost would be better spent on reducing rail and bus costs in England. Rupert Pitt, Stony Lane, Week, Winchester.
Cavalier attitude to wildflowers. That's the heading for a letter from Chris Gillam. Hampshire County Council's attitude to wildflowers on road verges is certainly insensitive. One of the great glories of the English countryside in spring is the riot of cow parsley along our hedgerows. I wrote again to the County Council this year asking them to delay cutting most of the verges until after the flowering of the cow parsley. I received a reply that answered none of my points, offered no reason for why they needed to cut the verges so early, and merely stated that that was what they always did and always would do. Like the labour of the crossing sweepers who move dust from one side of the road to another and back again, the original purpose of the activity seems lost in the rigmarole. Sure enough, almost all Hampshire lanes lost the best part of their roadside flowers again this year. Indeed, with the late spring, the clockwork programmed mowing ensured destruction just at the point of coming to flower. County Environment Chief Sean Woodward explains that it is all for the benefit of motorists. Is there any evidence that there is a road safety benefit from such destruction? And even if there is it worth our loss of wildflowers? Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
Vera Bruti, writes a letter headed "Not Listening to Their Electorate." How has Winchester ended up with a council that does not listen and appears to ride roughshod over anyone who tries to suggest they may have made the wrong planning decision? Your paper is full of examples, Chronicle May 23rd and June 13th. Residents increase resistance. They, Winchester City Council, have created a whole street opposed to what they want to do. Councillors dismiss opposition and give school the nod. Traffic and road safety fears ignored. Barton Farm lacks community facilities. Councillors expressed anger at this, but were told there was little to be done because of what Carla was contracted to in the Section 106 agreement. Fears over loss of public space. Winchester civic chiefs set to build on open spaces in Abbots Barton and Week, despite fears that the precious recreation space will be lost forever. I've met this condescending attitude from officers and some councillors when I've asked how large numbers will be able to use cycles as alternative transport from Barton Farm when the infrastructure is lacking. At the Barton Farm Forum, I finally had the answer, that it is not thought likely people will cycle into town, but will use buses, leaving their cars in the garage. The diverted road will meet the terms of the Section 106 agreement, and the new infrastructure, with its traffic calming measures, is expected to improve integration between the two parts of the development, enabling the road to be crossed more safely on bikes or on foot. So footpaths, cycle routes and cycle tracks will be provided to a high standard on site, but nowhere else. Vera Bruti, Manningford Close, Winchester.
Thank you very much. Now, if you have an issue that you'd like to air, you could contact the Hampshire Chronicle on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. And you could also, of course, write to the editor at number 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And we come on now to historical items, and I'm going to kick off with 200 years ago. This one is entitled "The Waywardness of Female Taste," and it's dated June the 28th, 1813. Elopement. An elopement of rather a singular kind has recently taken place. A gentleman who, about 10 years ago, was married to an amiable lady, closely allied to a most respectable family in Richmond, carried off on Wednesday a young lady from her mother's home near Isleworth, and the fugitives have not yet been heard of. The lady with whom this gallant eloped was universally admired in the first circles in that neighbourhood, and had received proposals of marriage from several young gentlemen of fortune. But such is sometimes the waywardness of female taste that this fair fugitive declined these honourable alliances to form a criminal union with a married man twice her own age.
100 years ago, June the 28th, 1913. Charged with threat of murder. In view of the marriage of Sir Joseph Tichborne on Wednesday, considerable interest attaches to a charge brought against a lady who claims to be the daughter of Sir Roger Tichborne. The case was opened before Mr. Hopkins at Bow Street on Tuesday, when the lady in question, who is the daughter of the claimant in the historic Tichborne trial, was charged with sending to the Earl of Granard a letter threatening to murder Miss Denise Greville, now Lady Tichborne, when she went to marry Sir Joseph at the Brompton Oratory on Wednesday. N.B. The defendant claimed that in spite of her letter, she had no intention of doing any harm to Miss Greville, and had only wanted to bring the case before the public. Another item. Practical gratitude. We learn with interest of a novel method which has been employed by Mr. and Mrs. Nash of Whitchurch for helping the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. As a mark of gratitude for what has been done at the hospital for their little child, they have secured definite promises from a number of people to make weekly gifts of a farthing, a halfpenny, or a penny for the hospital. They have undertaken to collect the money and to remit it annually, in addition to anything else they may do for the hospital. The total sum will be about £5 a year.
And two items from 50 years ago, June the 29th, 1963. MP's views on Profumo scandal. We must resist the temptation to demand a blood sacrifice in the form of the Prime Minister's resignation in order to expiate the sins of Mr. Profumo's troll world. We are not a cannibal tribe, said Mr. David Price, MP for Eastleigh and Parliamentary Secretary to the Board of Trade, speaking at Chandler's Ford on Saturday. Addressing the annual garden fete arranged by the Chandler's Ford North Branch, Mr. Price added, I will not have the Prime Minister hounded out of public life because of Mr. Profumo's whoring. Mr. Price said much had been said about the so-called affluent society, and it has been asserted, at least by implication, that adultery would have been less rampant if only the country had been decent enough to stay poor. And the second item, although no definite decision has yet been made on the construction of the 24 flats on the site of the old cooperative premises in Eastgate Street, it seems likely that only minor economies are to be affected in the project, which at present will cost £4,138 a flat. A special meeting of Winchester City Council's Building Subcommittee, which is to consider the matter on July the 8th, will doubtless have in its mind the general feeling of Wednesday night's council meeting that the merits of the scheme should not suffer. The prospect of high rents was a very real and realised one, but it was balanced by the high standard of accommodation likely to be obtained.
And two items from 25 years ago, June the 24th, 1988. Winchester City Council will introduce company cars in August in an attempt to stop other local authorities poaching their staff. The cars are part of a new pay and conditions deal worth £80,000 this year. The council is finding it increasingly difficult to recruit and retain staff as house prices rise and other authorities and private business increase salaries. Mrs. Pat Edwards said it was crazy that local authorities just up the ante every time they need members of staff or poach them. A powerful combination of national and regional organisations is joining Hampshire County and New Forest District Councils in opposing the CEGB plans for a massive new coal-fired power station at Fawley between the Solent and the New Forest. Representatives of the National Society for Clean Air, the Marine Conservation Society, the National Farmers Union, and the British Association of Nature Conservationists were among those who attended a discussion workshop on the Forley B proposal at the County Council's headquarters at the Castle, Winchester, last Friday. The CEGB has an almost 100% record of victories with its power station proposals at previous public inquiries.
Thank you. That's historical items. And Robin's going to give us the Hampshire Chronicle's own Vox Pop column, Your Say. Thank you, Robin.
We asked, should full lifetime prisoners, such as the Moors murderer Ian Brady, have the right to starve themselves to death? Cathy Farrand, 33, actuary of Fallow Field, Badger Farm, said, Brady should stay in the mental institute he is in. He did not give his victims the right to choose when to die, so neither should he have that right himself. Linda Tiplady, 58, scheme manager of Arle Gardens, Alsford, said, it would be cheaper for the country if people like that did starve themselves to death. But I think he should suffer as long as the family of the victims suffer. It's a difficult question. Robert Hubbard, 60, gardener of Spitfire End, Winnall, said, as a general principle, people should be allowed to die when they want, and I don't agree with euthanasia. I don't think anyone should take their own life, whether they're a criminal or not. And finally, Patricia Poole, 64, retired of Gordon Road, Winchester, said, perhaps he should have been given the death penalty at the time, but he should be made to suffer until the end of his life. He's paying the penalty for the children he killed.
Thank you. And it's editorial comment now, and this takes us back to the development of the River Park Leisure Centre. The editor heads this disappointing but understandable. Breaking news yesterday was the announcement that Winchester City Council looks set to redevelop the River Park Leisure Centre. Just as we went to press, Council leader Keith Wood revealed that he is minded to maintain sports provision in the centre of the city. The news will be greeted with disappointment, even dismay, by those who argued the deterioration of the 1970s River Park Leisure Centre was a good opportunity to move to Bar End and build a multi-million pound centre, including a 50-metre swimming pool. It would have been lovely to have top-notch facilities and fully capitalise on the Olympic legacy. But we have to live in the real world, and the £25 to £30 million would have been a huge financial burden. The risks highlighted yesterday with the government announcing further cuts to local authorities. It is hard to argue with Councillor Wood's assertion that whilst elite athletes are important, he is more concerned with the general public. It should not be forgotten that the council is still set to redevelop the leisure centre, but to build facilities more in line with a town of fewer than 40,000 people and a district of around 115,000 people. And the next item, please, from Jerry is first person,
which is entitled Creativity Alive and Kicking in a Changing Winchester, and comes from Judith Hennigan. Winchester has long been associated with literary endeavour. Keats, Austin, Hardy, we can read their words and retrace their footsteps through the water meadows, around the cathedral, and up West Hill to the prison where poor Tess Durbeyfield was hanged. Yet while the city rightly celebrates its literary heritage, it isn't enthralled to it. Creativity is alive and kicking. Take last Friday evening. I was sitting in The Vault, the basement student union venue at Winchester University, listening to the open mic Midnight Read. It was a free event, open to the public, as part of the Winchester Writers' Conference. Someone stood up to read from a play they were writing, and suddenly I was leaning forward, absorbed in dialogue that sparked with life and feeling. The reader's 5 minutes were over too soon, and I was left with that sense of being changed, somehow, by the experience. Of course, there's a long tradition of Winchester residents engaging with and participating in the city's arts events. Next week brings the Winchester Festival and Hat Fair once again, when the city opens itself up to street theatre, music and creative surprise. Local families have grown up with it and regard its joyful chaos as part of their summer landscape, even when it rains. Artists showcase their acts from all around the world, and there's homegrown talent too, some of it provided by our own students. One memorable Hat Fair moment came when I was least expecting it. I was hurrying into town with errands on my mind, hoping the crowds hadn't built up too much because I needed to get to a cash point. Then, as I reached the flying buttresses on the south side of the cathedral, a vision in white floated out of the shadows, an angel on roller shoes, plumpish, bearded, with a tinsel halo and magnificent pair of gauzy wings. He was off duty, cradling a coffee, yet he assumed an expression of earnest contemplation as soon as he clocked me. A typical Hat Fair encounter, you might say, but I had to smile, and once again I was changed, just a little. We are lucky in Winchester. Despite difficult times for many, the diversity and energy of contemporary creative practice has never been so evident in local writers' groups, in artists' collectives such as The Yard, at poetry jams in the Discovery Centre, music and events at venues such as the Railway. Late October brings another innovative 10-days event of creative collision between Winchester's own artists, performers, writers and residents, while the city's first ever poetry festival arrives in 2014, a much anticipated addition to Hampshire's cultural landscape. There is something for every age, taste and pocket here. There are so many opportunities to experience something new and allow oneself to be changed, a little or even a lot.
And this week we have a welcome return of the Belgarum column. It has three items, unusually. Claire will take the first, with Robin and Jerry following with the other two. Thank you, Claire.
This is headed, "We'll fit our wedding in somehow." The big day can be a stressful occasion, with fainting grooms and vanishing brides not unheard of. But a plucky couple from Oslebury are not in the least bit fazed that their big day clashes with another important event. As coordinator of the Oslebury Horticultural Show, which returns after a 40-year hiatus, Nigel White, who's 57, will have his hands full on August the 10th, but he says there's still ample time to tie the knot with fiancée Jennifer Dunn. While the judging is going on, we'll go into St Andrew's Church and get married. The service is at 12:15 p.m. Then we'll come out to the field for the official opening of the show, he said. But Jennifer will not be twiddling her thumbs either. I'm going to open the show in my wedding dress at 2:15 p.m, says the 46-year-old. The honeymoon will see the happy couple waste no time as they move on to the Great Dorset Steam Fair just 2 days after their wedding. Jennifer said, "He's not diplomatic, but I get round him." And there's a picture of the two of them with a large basket of vegetables.
And Robin with the next item, please.
Pomp or pop, no contest. Amid all the pomp and ceremony of a military parade in Winchester this week came quite a shock. Rather than traditional tunes, a band made up of the Rifles and the Adjutant General's Corps played a selection of pop songs. It is believed to be the first occasion in the city's rich history that a military band has played music by a South Korean rapper when it performed Psy's Gangnam Style. Other hits included the Who's Who Are You, Skyfall by Adele, and Build Me Up Buttercup by The Foundations. Belgarum was completely taken aback by this modern display, but was in a minority of one, as the crowd very clearly loved it. Calendar Clash gives Ernie an extra month. Ernie Jeffs has rarely hit the ground running as Winchester's new mayor, elected last month. Now the councillor for the Alsfords is looking forward to an extra month in the post. Normally, the role runs from May to May, but in June 2014, there will be Euro elections. So instead of having the city council polls in May, and then another a month later, the elections are to be held on the same date to keep costs down. There is a precedent. Cecily Sutton was mayor in 2004-05, and there was the same arrangement. In 2009, the county council and Euro elections were also held on the same day.
MP's timely tennis question. With Wimbledon here once again, the perennial question is being asked, will there ever be a British winner? No, despite the picture above, Steve Bryan is not putting himself forward as a contender. The Winchester MP is involved with a nationwide schools tennis programme that may nurture a British winner at some point. He raised the issue of tennis in schools during Prime Minister's Question Time last week. Henry Beaufort and King's School were flagged up for their work with the Tennis Foundation and the LTA's schools tennis programme. St Swithin's Week Primary and Shepherdstown schools are also taking part. The exchange in the Commons came on the same day Mr Bryan organised a unique pre-Wimbledon event underneath the iconic Big Ben Tower outside Parliament. Mr Bryan, who played a short game with former British number one Greg Rusetsky, said the LTA's Tennis Is campaign is working hard to bring tennis to everyone, not just members of clubs, and not just for 2 weeks each summer when Wimbledon takes place. I'm a huge fan and love to play when I can, especially doubles, which I think is the game at its best. The event was a second meeting for the pair, who met in March 2011 when Greg opened the new indoor courts at Winchester Tennis and Squash Club. Since 2009, the Egan Schools tennis programme has reached 2 million schoolchildren, putting over 400,000 rackets in their hands and handed out nearly 800,000 tennis balls to young people across the UK.
Thank you, Gerry. And those are the regular features chosen for you this week, and it's a very full programme, obviously an indication that Winchester is very busy in June and July every year. Well, Claire has the first item of the general news for us, please. Over to you, Claire.
This is headed, Insurers Exploit Small Print to Deny Cover to Terminally Ill Man. A terminally ill Winchester man has been denied a £100,000 life insurance policy. Andy Young was diagnosed with bowel cancer last August, and despite several operations, the cancer spread to his liver. The prison officer, who's 54, of Greenhill Road, was given a year to live and tried to cash the policy, which he said included critical illness cover, with Aviva. But he says the company are not paying out because the cover does not apply to the last 18 months of the 10-year policy, which expired this month. Mr. Young said, "We were not alerted about this when we took out the policy. We accept that it is in there, but it means that we are paying for 6.5 years cover rather than for 10. If they had contacted us at 6.5 years, I might have taken out another policy. I can understand why they have the first 2 years clause, because someone could be trying to pull the wool over their eyes. But the last 18 months just doesn't make sense. His wife, Vanessa, who's 49, a practice manager, said the money would help her take time off work to be with Andy during his last months. The idea was this money would help pay for a locum at work, so I could spend more time with Andy. I can't afford to take unpaid leave because we still have a mortgage to pay. She added they were really grateful for support from family and friends, some of whom have set up a Facebook page to raise awareness. Andy added, I just hope this can do somebody else some good. If it gets people looking at their policies before something similar happens, it will be worthwhile. But the couple have been able to cash another £150,000 life insurance policy with Aviva, which still has several years to run. Winchester MP Steve Brine has also written to Aviva on their behalf, but a spokesman for Aviva said the policy did not have critical illness cover, but rather terminal illness benefit. We are very sorry to hear about Mr. Young's situation, and we appreciate that this must be a very difficult time for him and his family. Neither of Mr. Young's policies included a critical illness option, and as such, we were unable to consider a claim on this basis. And there's a lovely picture, actually, of Andy Young and Vanessa, pictured in happier times.
Trust takes issues to Westminster. Winchester Preservation campaigners have been at Parliament to raise issues with the City MP Steve Brine. Senior figures from the City of Winchester Trust, Keith Lehman and Michael Carden, visited Westminster last week. Among items on the Trust agenda were coalition plans to relax planning laws, known as permitted development rights, the future of Bushfield Camp, the redevelopment of the station area in Winchester, and Barton Farm. They also discussed the energy code likely to be used by CALA on the Andover Road development, and many issues around transport and connectivity with the local area when it is built. The MP has agreed to be the guest speaker at this year's City of Winchester Trust AGM, which will be held on Monday, September the 23rd. Mr. Brine said, "It's become a regular meeting for me with the Trust, and I am keen for that to continue. I find these sessions extremely useful, and it gives the Trust a chance to convey members' interests to me, which I always use to inform myself when feeding back to ministers. As a long-standing member of the Trust myself, I know how much good work they do in the city and how lucky Winchester is to have such dedicated people looking out for it." Keith Lehman, Trust Chairman, said, "It's so valuable to be able to meet with Steve on a regular basis, allowing us to discuss concerns likely to affect the city in both the medium and long term. I am also delighted he has accepted our invitation to speak at the Trust's AGM." And the item is accompanied by a photograph showing MP Steve Brine flanked by Michael Carden and Keith Lehman.
River Cottage given Abbey Mill go-ahead. Winchester planners have backed controversial proposals for a new city restaurant, but the battle may not be over. A planning committee last week unanimously approved changing the use of Abbey Mill in Colebrook Street from office to restaurant. It means River Cottage, run by celebrity chef Hugh Fernley Whittingstall, will take on a 15-year lease once structural improvements are completed. But residents are considering legal action. Speaking after the meeting, Colebrook Street resident Guy Ashton said, "We will talk to our barrister and consider judicial review. I think the committee has been glib in its analysis of the impact of the site, and in doing so ignored their own local plan. The application was submitted by the council itself, and the committee heard residents and councillors were concerned about noise and traffic problems, and went against the council's own policies of not having restaurants in residential areas. Mr. Ashton, who works for Deutsche Bank, told the committee, "This development is not suitable, is in direct contravention with the local plan, and must be refused no matter how much the council wants the rent." The committee decided the benefit for tourism and finding a use for the building outweighed concerns. Councillor Therese Evans said, "The prospective tenant is well known and respected, and I think this will be an asset. It will provide employment and encourage tourists to stay."
Crime crackdown successful in city. Fall in violence, but domestic offences rise. A crackdown on crime has been successful in Winchester, according to new City Council figures. An annual performance report of the city's Community Safety Partnership showed a significant drop in violent crime, antisocial behaviour and criminal damage. But repeat domestic assaults remain a concern, after there were 66 incidents last year, 46% above the CSP's target. The report said, "The CSP has achieved a number of successful outcomes during the last year, contributing to the reduction of crime and disorder in a variety of ways. However, the partnership is mindful that there is still a lot of work to be done and that it is important to deliver a community safety service that responds to local need." On the rise in domestic crime, the report said, "There are a number of reasons why this target was not achieved, and that could be attributed to greater public awareness, increased confidence in reporting processes, or a data anomaly." The CSP is made up from the public, private and voluntary sectors, with members including the City Council, police and fire services, and Winchester Area Community Action, WACA. Its priorities for the past year were reducing crime, tackling disorder, particularly antisocial behaviour, and responding to community concerns, including speeding and rural crime. The figures for assaults are among the lowest in Hampshire, with only Hart and East Hampshire doing better. There were 440 assaults causing injury against a target of 504, while there were 823 incidents of criminal damage, 22% less than a targeted 1,056. Antisocial behaviour was divided into three categories: personal, environmental and nuisance, with all results at least 12% below CSP aims. Meanwhile, the CSP also oversaw Winchester Street pastors, who patrol the city streets on Thursday, Friday and Saturday nights, offering help, water and flip-flops to revellers. It is also involved with the pub watch and shop watch schemes, where proprietors communicate with each other via radio to warn of suspicious customers. The report is due to go before the Overview and Scrutiny Committee for comment on Monday, July the 1st.
Another A33 accident. An air ambulance was called after two cars collided on the A33 road near Winchester on Monday, June the 24th. Three people were treated for injuries after a Ford Fiesta and a Mazda crashed into each other near the junction with London Road, Kingsworthy. Police were called at 1:24 p.m. and closed off the road in both directions whilst the air ambulance landed. A spokesman for South Central Ambulance Service said that injuries to a 19-year-old male were at first considered serious, but were later deemed non-life-threatening. The man was taken in an ambulance by road to Southampton General Hospital. Police said no arrests had been made in connection with the incident and that normal traffic was resumed by 3 p.m. The incident came 2 days after a three-vehicle collision on the A34, also in Kingsworthy, in which paramedics treated 5 people at the scene, with one taken by ambulance to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and another to the North Hampshire Hospital in Basingstoke. The junction between London Road and the A33 has long been a source of concern for residents, and MP Steve Bryan is chairing a meeting to discuss it on Monday, July the 1st, with civic chiefs and police. It is understood that discussions will centre on a document produced by Hampshire County Council regarding potential improvement at the junction. And the item is illustrated by a photograph of County Councillor Sean Woodward and MP Steve Bryan pictured at the notorious junction at Kingsworthy.
Cycle Marathon works for Nick. A Winchester businessman has taken a cycle to work scheme to a new extreme. Nick Richens, Managing Director of London Camera Exchange, cycled more than 1,000 miles across the country, visiting all 28 branches along the way. Mr. Richens, 54, lives and works in Winchester, where the head office is based in the square. He set off on June the 4th and finished in the city on Friday, June the 21st, celebrating with a party at 4 p.m. During the 18-day ride, he spent more than 88 hours on the saddle. So far, he has raised more than £11,700 for the MS Society and the Prostate Project. His father, Eric, died in 2012 of prostate cancer, while his sister is in the early stages of multiple sclerosis. A year ago, I ran the London Marathon, he said, and enjoyed it so much I decided to look for another challenge in 2013. I fancied cycling, and having looked at the popular options of London to Paris or Land's End to John O'Groats, I thought, why not make up something of my own? And there is a photograph of Mr. Richens at the end of his marathon, still managing to smile.
Students plough proceeds into good cause. When Sparshot College students handed over the proceeds of their 24 hours ploughathon to RABI, the Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institution, they found out firsthand the difference their cheque will make to the farming families supported by the charity. Sally Field, RABI Regional Manager, thanked the students for their cheque and continued support, and said, "Many farming families are really struggling. Some have simply reached the limit of their ability to juggle finances and borrow more. Others are trying to deal with the fallout from last year's disastrous weather, which saw significantly reduced yields and incomes, as well as substantial rises in costs, such as animal feed and fertiliser. Up to the beginning of May, RABI had paid out £203,000 in emergency payments to new callers to its helpline, more than double the amount paid in the first 6 months of 2012. Calls to its emergency helpline are currently running at around 9 a day, and the charity received as many calls from potential new beneficiaries in 4 weeks in April as in the first 4 months of 2012. The ploughathon raised £900, of which £600 was donated to RABI and £300 to the Salisbury Hospital Appeal. And there's a picture of all the students handing over the cheque.
Dorothy hits 100 and publishes a book. A woman who taught at a Chandler's Ford school for more than 50 years has celebrated her 100th birthday. Dorothy Wise hosted a party recently with around 80 people attending. She was born in Sherborne, Dorset, to a pair of teachers, and her mother subsequently set up Sherborne House School in Chandler's Ford in 1933. Dorothy immediately joined as a teacher and spent 51 years there, ending up as owner and headmistress of the preparatory school. She is also a published author, releasing a book on nature, Three Gardens, to coincide with her 100th birthday, despite being virtually blind and deaf. Dorothy previously wrote a history of the school, Sherborne House School, the first 50 years, and the piece is illustrated by a picture of Dorothy displaying her telemessage from the Queen.
Going wild for Animal Man Nick. Animals were the stars of the show at Hursley's annual village fete. Residents were defiant on Saturday, June the 22nd, as grey skies and strong winds passed ominously over the grounds of John Keeble Primary School. Many amongst the hordes were there to see the Animal Man, Nick Spellman. Back for the second year running, Mr. Spellman brought along a meerkat, a skunk, a snake, an owl, and a giant snail, to name just a few. It was all part of his show, which introduces children and adults to exotic animals. All the animals go down well, but the spider probably got the biggest reaction. With the meerkats, we tried to explain how all exotic animals are not suitable as pets. People see meerkats and think, I would love that as a pet, but they're not suitable, so we try to get that across as part of the show. Mr. Spellman can be seen performing at the Natural History Museum, as well as on TV. However, he said fates like Hursley's pose their own challenges. You have a variety of age groups, so it's young and old, and we have to be bright and lively. As residents milled round among the usual favourites, such as bric-a-brac stalls, soft toy tombola, a fire engine, and tin can alley, they were treated to a few golden oldies over the public address system by school councillor turned DJ Andy Hyder. Music was something of a theme, as the hall hosted both the school choir and the school drumming club. Co-organiser Sonia Hildebrandt said the attendance of around 600 adults matched last year's figure. She added, "It's a nightmare to organise these things, but tremendously satisfying when it comes together." And the fair raised a splendid £7,286. And there are pictures of enthralled and delighted children watching Nick Spellman with his animals and birds.
Teenager seeks to help India's poorest. A teenager from Winchester has been selected for the International Citizen Service, helping to fight global poverty by volunteering in a developing country. Daniel Ellis, who's 19, will spend 3 months helping a poverty-stricken community in Odisha, India, but needs to raise £1,500. The ex-Peter Simmons student faces a race against time. "I didn't find out about the placement until mid-May. I've been working hard with a job in London, but hope the local community can help me reach the target. I'll work with young people to raise awareness of sexual and reproductive health, as well as helping them find employment opportunities. I'm really just helping them help themselves." Restless Development, which works with the International Citizen Service, focuses on the energy young people bring to the table, as the populace of the countries where the charity is based are all very young. Ellis is planning to sell £1 raffle tickets, with a £250 first prize and further prizes of £150 and £50. It is also being sponsored by Buckley's Chartered Accountants of Romsey and Winchester-based Boxit Data Management Limited.
Recycling scheme earns nomination. A Winchester hospice has nominated a Hampshire businesswoman for a prestigious award. Naomi House has proposed Dawn Smith for the annual Chairman's Award after she organised fundraisers at Southampton-based heating company Dimplex, where she works. Dawn has been raising money for the hospice for more than 5 years and runs a recycling scheme at the company's head office, where staff donate unwanted goods which are traded for cash. She said, "I'm delighted and humbled to be nominated because our fundraising is such an easy thing to do and helps a local cause that touches many of our lives. Everyone here has really got behind it because it works for everyone. Not only does it raise money, but it also helps us declutter our homes. The award recognises people who have made a significant contribution to the charity. It will be judged later this year and presented by outgoing chairman Khalid Aziz, who steps down in September." And there's a picture of the nominated Dimplex employee Dawn Smith with a very large teddy bear.
Fine for driver who almost killed police motorcyclist. A man has been fined £830 for nearly killing a police officer in a road crash near Alsford. Darren Hankin was driving a yellow Audi S3 along the A31 at Four Marks when he cut into the path of PC Nick Barman's police motorcycle. PC Barman, 47, sustained serious internal and brain injuries as well as broken bones, and almost died at the scene on February the 4th. He was taken to Southampton General Hospital, where he remained in critical care for over a month. He is now recovering at home. Hankin, 41, of Bernard Avenue, Four Marks, admitted careless driving when he appeared at Basingstoke Magistrates Court last week. He was fined £650 and ordered to pay a victim surcharge of £95 and costs of £85. He also received 9 penalty points on his licence. Via a statement from his solicitor, Hankin accepted full responsibility and did not seek to mitigate his actions. PC Barman's partner, Alice Morrison, was in court to hear the plea. The officer, who underwent 31 hours of surgery after the crash and still has further operations to come, said, "It's important that Mr. Hankin knows that Alice and I bear no ill will towards him whatsoever. Everything that happened occurred in literally 1/40th of a second. A moment earlier, I would have had enough braking distance to avoid a collision. A moment later, and I would have overtaken him. The whole thing was an accident. And I bear no grudges, especially as Mr. Hankin has been so honest about his mistake from the start. I still have a very long road to recovery ahead, but injuries willing, I am determined to return to work. I would like to thank everyone for their support since the crash, especially Alice, those responsible for saving my life, and my colleagues who had the difficult job of investigating the incident. I've had wonderful support from my friends, family, medical professionals, colleagues, and from Chief Constable Andy Marsh, who had to deal with my crash on his first day as Chief Constable. That must have been tough."
Mad Hatter's party at Patchwork Birthday Reunion. An Alsford nursery has celebrated its 20th anniversary with a Mad Hatter's tea party. Patchwork Day Nursery and Pre-School invited past and present customers and staff to join the reunion last Friday. Nursery manager Nicola Baxter said, "We wanted to do something fun and memorable to mark the occasion. So by getting all who have contributed to Patchwork over the years together is a perfect way of celebration." The Pound Hill Nursery provides childcare for 39 children aged 6 months to 5 years. with part-time and full-time places available. And there's a picture of children and helpers and parents and balloons and things.
Primary school is cleared to expand. Plans to expand a primary school have cleared another hurdle. Winchester City Council has raised no objection to an application to add 3 classrooms to Kingsworthy School, increasing pupil numbers from 330 to 420 and making the school 2-form entry. It will allow the school to enter around 60 children in reception each year. The plan also includes removing 2 temporary classrooms. The application will be determined by this county council and is part of a wider programme to deal with a shortage in school places. Plans have already been approved for a new 420-pupil primary school at the Westgate, while St Peter's Roman Catholic Primary School in Oliver's Battery has also been expanded.
Games Makers Calshot Invitation. Winchester volunteers at last year's Olympics and Paralympics Games in London are invited to a party next month. All Hampshire Games Makers are welcome to attend the 50th anniversary of Calshot Activities Centre on July the 9th. Calshot has played a significant role for Olympians who've trained at its velodrome, as it's the only indoor track in the South. Anyone attending must register by July the 1st. For more details, visit hants.gov.uk/golden-standard.
Thank you, everyone, and those are the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Any problems with your recording, then I'll give you that number again and the name to contact. It's Lynn Parker, of course, and her number is 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826, and of course we hope you don't have to use that number. Well, we say thanks to our editors again, Bill Argles and Christine Aston, and of course to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thank you also to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Robin.
Goodbye.
And Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, goodbye. Now, would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, putting the address label inside the wallet. Have a very good week and thank you for listening. Mm-hmm.